Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Ambibulous, a show where we discuss a variety of topics about alcohol. From beer styles, the brewing process, distillation and spirits, and even liquor laws, there's a fascinating world to discover. On today's episode, we discover the history of rum. Joining me today is Michael Cashy of Thomas & Moriarty here in downtown Mandan. I'm your host, Connor Brecky. Let's all raise a glass to the Ambibulous. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Today, the question is, where's the rum? Well, luckily, we have an answer for you. I'm joined again with Mr. Michael Cashy, and today's episode, we're going to go through a little bit of history about rum and where you might be able to find some. Hint, there's a place in Mandan. All right, so rum. What is rum in short?
So basically, rum is going to be once again, a distilled spirit that's going to be made from sugarcane or a byproduct of like sugarcane production. So either a sugarcane juice or molasses, which is going to be what's left over when you boil sugarcane down.
And then the name rum is kind of uncertain, I suppose. There's a few ideas out there where it came from. One of them being, I believe, the word rumbullion, the beverage of boiling sugarcane stalks.
Yeah, that to me seems more like what would be most likely the actual origin of the word rum. But honestly, who knows?
It's a mystery.
It's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, probably actually even longer than we even think.
Yeah, because anything alcohol, it's like, oh, here's something, let's ferment it, and poof, there you go.
Wow, then distilling is possibly older than we thought as well.
So rum is fermented from molasses, sugarcane, and then are there, like, how do you get it to that fermented stage? There's different types of yeasts.
Yeah, so you can either do, most distillers, or a lot of distillers, I should say, are going to use like a specific yeast strain. And then other distillers are going to actually basically do an open air fermentation where they allow all of those random wild natural yeasts to get in there. And then those will usually you'll have like a little bit of a funk to those, because usually once again, rum is insanely confusing. So I don't want to say that this type is going to yield this type of rum, because as soon as you get into the still, it's going to be a totally different rum. Rum is, it's a wild card. There's no legislation really, with the exception of rum agricole. So rum can be produced anywhere, any kind of flavor profile. It's a bit of a nightmare trying to decide what kind of rum is what and how to classify it.
And then, of course, you have to ferment it, and then in goes to the distilling medium. So it can be done in either pots or columns.
Yep.
And as you said, there's no real standard. It's just kind of whatever they feel like.
Yeah, and then the different type of stills are going to have a different flavor profile as well. So if you're doing something like, and it's going to be the same with whiskey or anything else, but you tend to notice it more in rum, I feel. If you do like a pot still, you're going to have a little bit more of that kind of funk to it. It's almost like a grassy kind of like how IPAs have that dankiness to them. Really common with Jamaican rums. You do a column still, it's going to be a little bit lighter and tend to be sweeter.
And then generally these are aged in barrels of some type.
Yeah, so this is once again where rum gets super confusing, because some rums are bottled directly. Some rums are aged for 2 years, 8 years, 10 years. So they tend to be like a amber color. Other rums are aged for 6 to 7 years. Or 10 years, and then they're filtered out to where they're once again a clear rum. So with a rum, you'll sometimes have an older rum that is going to be clear like a brand new spirit would. And there's no rhyme. Well, there's no rhyme or reason as far as I know as to why.
You mean there's no rum or reason?
Oh, no.
I couldn't resist.
No puns.
So like, I guess this is just me and maybe other people, but as soon as I hear rum, I always think of pirates. Can't help it. I guess thanks Disney and Johnny Depp for that, maybe, but
Yeah, it's kind of inevitable now. The thing with rum is everybody was drinking rum, not just pirates, but I think because we tend to look at seafaring people, seafaring jobs. what would a pirate be? Seafaring individuals as drinking what was kind of common in the areas that they were going to. And we saw a lot of piracy in the Caribbean. So they would have been drinking a lot of rum, but so was the Navy too. The British Royal Navy actually until 1972, I believe. Don't quote me on that year, but they got rid of their rum ration. One, it was distilled, so it would last longer than water or beer. And then two, it was plentiful because of the unfortunately, the slave trade in the Caribbean area. So there was a lot of rum being produced at that time.
And then I believe this specific period is in the 1600s-ish. I do remember seeing a date about that. And then rum was basically a sailor's ration in the Royal Navy.
Yep. Yep. They called it the Black Tot. No, the Black Tot was the last rations that they did. But they had they started diluting it. Oh God, I can't. Late 1700s, I believe, with lime.
Grog, let's just call it the mid 1700s.
Well, grog was kind of a sloppy kind of a mess, but later on ended up being diluted a little bit more with lime, sugar, and then a little bit of water, which is kind of what created the trinity of especially Cuban cocktails, rum, lime, sugar. So if you're a daiquiri freak, that's where that came from.
So we go from a bunch of pirates drinking rum on the ship and, you know, looting and all that stuff. But what is rum today? How much has it changed since then?
Well, from what I've seen, I think rum is expanded because it's being produced a lot more. 60-some countries, I think, almost every single continent, with the exception of Antarctica, is producing rum. So we're getting a lot more experimental. We're beginning to see more blenders, and most rums are blended. So they're bought from a distillery, and then they're blended from a different producer. So we're starting to see, I think, a lot of different types of flavor profiles get introduced. And then we're also seeing new old styles being resurrected. We have one by one of my favorite producers called Plantation, Reverend Stiggins. And it's going to be a old, it would have been Victorian era style rum that would have been infused with pineapples. So it's a really juicy, rich, delicious rum that had basically been wiped out for 200 years and is now back and probably one of the best rums you'll ever have.
There's something called Batavia, I think. Would you mind telling us a bit about that?
Yeah. So Batavia, or Batavia Arrak, it's ARRACK, and that's going to be important in a second. This is going to be an Indonesian sugarcane spirit. Is very similar to rum. And if you would look at old punch recipes, they're going to be calling, actually, they won't call for rum. They're going to call for Batavia Arrak. And this is going to be made from sugarcane, but it's also going to use a red rice yeast to kind of kickstart the fermentation. So it's going to be super, super funky. One of the best descriptions I've seen of it described it as a mix of horseradish and vanilla. And then just one day it clicks. It's weird because I felt the same way. But all of a sudden, like one day I was like, wait, this is actually really, really good. It's like something you've never had before.
That is a very interesting combination.
It doesn't taste like horseradish and vanilla, but it's like the concept of mixing horseradish and vanilla. It doesn't work. But all of a sudden, like, hey, I get this. And then we had somebody who asked for a glass of Arrak, and I was like, yeah, no, we have that. And I start pouring this, like, that's not right. I'm like, well, this is. And Arrak is with one R, is a Middle Eastern, like almost like a ouzo, kind of a black licorice spirit. So specify between Batavia or Arrak if you're looking for that.
Okay, good to know. So we've talked about the history of rum and stuff. I'm sure people want to get one right now. So like, What are common ways to serve it, and any kind of like etiquettes or anything that people should know?
It's going to depend on the rum. Some rums are perfect just sipping on the rocks. Other rums are really accent a cocktail well. Some rums are rum-esque. I should say spirits are better being used like as a spice in a cocktail, just a little bit.
And as far as what you guys have to offer, what do you have on your guys' menu?
I think right now our rum selection actually is the smallest it's been in a while. I think we only have about 10, maybe 15 rums. But it ranges from our like ones that we would use in our cocktails, like the Real McCoys, which are fantastic and they're good on their own, but they're made really well for cocktails. And then we have others like Beryl, who's a blender, who's won a ton of awards. That would be something that you would typically sip on the rocks or neat if you can handle a like 120 proof rum.
Then do you have a favorite way to serve rum or drink it yourself?
It depends on the rum. Some rums I'm going to have in a cocktail. The daiquiri, however, is my all-time favorite cocktail. If I go to a place that's known for their cocktails, the first drink I'm going to get, doesn't matter what season it is, it's going to be a daiquiri. Others, like a Mai Tai, like a classic Mai Tai, don't need that pineapple or passion fruit. Give me tart, give me nutty, give me a little sweet, give me some bitter.
Mai Tais are always good.
Yeah, an underrated drink that unfortunately got ruined with the disco era.
Well, we kind of learned a bit of history about rum and what the deal with pirates is and everything. So if you're curious about rum, I can't really name a better place than to come down here, Thomas and Moriarty, and try rum. Get a cocktail, get a daiquiri, get a Mai Tai. So again, thank you for hosting me at your guys' place again. Much appreciated.
Anytime.
And come on down for a drink. Until next time, cheers.
The Ambibulous is made possible with Castos, giving creators the tools to connect with their audience and community. The music is courteous of Pond 5, with over 25 million royalty-free stock videos, music, photos, and sound effects. There's something for every creator. Today's episode was recorded at Thomas and Moriarty's in downtown Mandan, North Dakota. I would like to thank Mr. Cashy for his time and the use of his facility to make this episode possible. For the latest updates, videos, photos, and web links to our guests, please consider checking out our Facebook page, The Ambibulous Podcast. And of course, a big thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for all of your support. Until next time, cheers.